of October. On the 14th of October, in concert, there is a Elim-wide prayer and worship evening for Northeast churches. So I guess half a dozen or a few more churches will be gathering together in concert to pray together and worship together from 7 till 9. But also, if you're a young person, there is the Wearside Youth for Christ youth gatherings on. Do we know where? Hope Church in Hendon. So if you want to go to either of those and you're not able to get yourself there, let us know and we'll give you a hand to get to where you want to be. And hopefully there'll be great nights for the young people and churches in the Northeast. Joshua chapter 1 and verse 1. It says, after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord said to Joshua, son of Nun, Moses' aide, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan into the land I'm about to give them, to the Israelites. I will give you everywhere you set your foot, as I promised Moses. Your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon, from the great river of the Euphrates, all the Hittite country, to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. Be strong and courageous, because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors to give them. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous? Do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. So Joshua ordered the officers of the people, go through all the camp and tell the people, get your provisions ready. 3 days from now, you will cross the Jordan here to go in and take possession of the land the Lord your God is giving you for your own. But to the Reubenites, the Gadites, and the half-tribe of Manasseh, Joshua said, remember the command that Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you after he said, the Lord your God will give you rest by giving you this land. Your wives, your children, and your livestock may stay in the land that Moses gave you east of the Jordan. But all your fighting men, ready for battle, must cross over ahead of your fellow Israelites. You are to help them until the Lord gives them rest as he's done for you, and until they too have taken possession of the land the Lord your God is giving them. After that, you may go back and occupy your own land, which Moses, the servant of the Lord, gave you east of the Jordan towards the sunrise. Then they answered Joshua, whatever you've commanded us, we will do, and wherever you send us, we will go. Just as we fully obeyed Moses, so we will obey you. Only may the Lord your God be with you as he was with Moses. Whoever rebels against your word and does not obey it, whatever you may command them, will be put to death. Only be strong and courageous. Last week, we gave some thought to the idea of what now? That in moments of transition and as things change, we find ourselves quite often asking the question, what happens now? And we reminded ourselves that God has a plan. Even through the dysfunction and the mess, through the ugliness of some stuff, God's got a plan. Through people's evil intent, God's got a plan. But God doesn't just have a plan for the Israelites. He doesn't just come along and say, do you know what I would think would be a really good idea? If you... I've looked at you, I've made an assessment, and I think, you know, you'd be well able now to go and do this. I've done some forecasting. I've made my calculations. I've put my thoughts together, and here's my plan. The statement God makes is crystal clear. I'm going to give you the land. Joshua 1 and verse 2. Get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give you to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot. God's promise to the Israelites is that he's giving them the land. That no one will be able to stand against them. He'll be with them and he won't leave them. Let me read you the verses, Joshua verses 2 to 5. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now then, you and all these people get ready to cross the Jordan River into the land I'm about to give them, to the Israelites. I will give you every place where you set your foot. As I promised Moses, your territory will extend from the desert to Lebanon and from the great river, the Euphrates, all the Hittite country to the Mediterranean Sea in the west. No one will be able to stand against you all the days of your life. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. I think it's a beautiful promise. I think it's beautiful. It's pretty good, right? It's the type of promise that deserves to be on a mug. Or on a poster on someone's wall. Printed onto your bookmarks. It's that type of... I'm going to give you the land. No one's going to be able to oppose you. Nothing's going to stand in your way. As I was with Moses, I will be with you. I'll never leave you nor forsake you. And God's crystal clear about who's doing that. I'm giving you the land. I am giving you the land. But he doesn't finish his statement there. It says to Joshua in verse 6, be strong and courageous because you will lead these people to inherit the land I swore to their ancestors. Be strong and very courageous. Be careful to obey all the law my servant Moses gave you. Do not turn from it to the right or to the left, that you may be successful wherever you go. Keep this book of the law always on your lips. Meditate on it day and night, so that you may be careful to do everything written in it. Then you will be prosperous and successful. Have I not commanded you, be strong and courageous, do not be afraid, do not be discouraged, for the Lord your God will be with you wherever you go. Joshua's, God's promise, Joshua is giving him the land. He set out the borders of that land within the promise. He's told him, no opposition's going to be able to stand up against you. And that he will always be with them. Yet he requires something of Joshua. I'm giving you this land. And yet you need to be strong and courageous. No one will be able to stand against you. And yet you need to be strong and very courageous. I will give you everywhere your feet tread. And you need to obey all the law so that you may be successful wherever you go. I will be with you, and yet you need to keep this book of the law on your lips, meditating on it, so you do all it says, so that then you will be prosperous and successful. And it's not the main point of what I want to say, but let me try and get it said quickly because I can't ignore it. God's outworking his purpose in my life. He's fulfilling his promises, and yet it requires something of me. Let me put it like this. 2 Corinthians 5:17. If any man be in Christ, he is a new creation. The old has gone, the new has come. But Ephesians 4:22 says you were taught with regard to your former way of life to put off your old self, which is being corrupted by its deceitful desires, to be made new in the attitude of your minds, and to put on the new self, created to be like God in true righteousness and holiness. I am a new creation in Christ. The old has gone, the new has come. And yet I have to put off my old self and put on my new self. God has made me a new creation, and yet there is work for me to do. Philippians 2 and verse 13. It is God who works in you to will and to act in order to fulfill his good purpose. But Philippians 2:12 says, I'm to be obedient and work out my salvation with fear and trembling, because it's God who works in me to will and to act according to his good purpose. Philippians 1 verse 6. He who began a good work in me is seeing it through to completion. Yet 1 Timothy 4 verse 7 says, I need to train myself for godliness. And there's this reality in how God works, I'm going to tell you, where he is doing something, but you are not a passive observer. You are an active participant. And so God is giving the land to the Israelites. He's giving them the land. And yet Joshua has to do something. And that something is going to require some stuff of him. He's going to need to be strong and courageous. He's going to need to be strong and very courageous. He's going to need to meditate on the Lord day and night, not letting it depart from his mouth. And I think our tendency is to find ourselves on the extreme of those things. Whether either it's all me or it's all God. And so I end up being either really passive in my walk with God, because he's got a plan and he's going to do something. Or I get really legalistic about things because I'm going to make myself righteous. And actually, I need to live in the tension of those two things. God is outworking his plan, but he expects something of me in the process. God's doing something with my life. It is him and it's for his glory. And yet he expects me to walk in that. There's a fascinating statement, 1 Peter chapter 3, which says, God waited patiently while Noah built the ark. God waited patiently while Noah built the ark. God had a plan. The ark was God's design. But he's waiting for Noah to build it so that he can get on with what he was doing. And if Noah decides to take a day off, gets sidetracked with something else, God's still waiting. Like I said, it's not my main point, so let me move on. Because Joshua has to do something, and that requires something of him. There's a beautiful promise, and it is, I think it's glorious. But actually, how that promise is going to be fulfilled is less beautiful and glorious. So in Joshua 2, Joshua sends two spies into Jericho. They're not very good spies. Because it seems almost immediately the king knows they're there. I don't know much about the espionage industry. I'm not an expert on spying. But I think one of the fundamental principles is that the people you're spying on aren't meant to know you're there spying. This hasn't got off to a great start. And they're dependent on a prostitute for their safety and the preservation of their life. I'm going to suggest to you it was a big enough deal for Joshua to send spies in the first place. Joshua's been a spy. He's done this job. It didn't go very well. Caleb, reflecting on it in Joshua 14 and verse 8, says, "My fellow Israelites who went up with me made the hearts of the people melt in fear." This didn't go very well. They sent spies before, and what the spies achieved was fear in the people. Joshua sent spies again. I'm going to tell you that's a big deal. And what he finds out on the back of it is actually, well, the king found out and we had to hide and it all went quite badly. And they haven't moved yet. Joshua chapter 3. They're going to cross over the Jordan. The Israelites have crossed a good bit of water. But it's not until the priests carrying the ark put their feet into the water that the water stops. I would find that a very nervous moment. Moses stretched out his arm over the Red Sea and it parted. I've gathered all the people, told them 3 days' time we're crossing the Jordan. They're all ready now to cross. We're sending the ark ahead of us with the elders carrying it, but it's not until the elders put their feet in the water. I mean, it's a bit close for comfort, isn't it? I would like the water to have walled up on either side. And I mean, at what point do you stop if you don't think the water's really stopping? Joshua 5, there's this strange encounter at the end of Joshua 5. On their approach to Jericho, the commander of the army of the Lord comes before Joshua. Joshua asks him this question: "Are you for us or for our enemies?" The response would give me all sorts of questions, because what he says is neither. What he says is neither. Go and read Joshua 5 for yourself. Neither. I'm going to tell you, in that moment, I'd be going, "What do you mean, neither? What on earth are you talking about? Me and God have got a deal." If something was going to give me hesitation, God, who's giving me the land, the commander of his army, me asking him, "Are you for us or for them?" and him going, "Neither." That would stop me in my tracks for a little while. It's not what Joshua does. Joshua 6. 40,000 armed men ready for battle have crossed the Jordan. They've arrived at Jericho. Joshua's got a plan. And I don't think it's the greatest military strategy in all of the world. What will we do? Well, for 6 days, we're going to just walk around it. Once. Just walk around it. But don't say anything. On the seventh day, we're going to walk around it 7 times. And when I give the command, we're going to be really noisy. You what? This is the plan. These are people who've watched their parents and grandparents die in the wilderness, hearing of the promise, this land flowing with milk and honey. I can imagine I'd be fairly eager just to be ramming down them walls with something, throwing myself over them. God said he's going to be with us. Let's just get on with this. And actually, what Joshua has to do is present this really weird plan to a group of people who've been waiting a very long time to inherit their promise. And then in Joshua chapter 7, they get beat. They lose at Ai because of the sin of Achan. They sent 3,000 men into battle and they lost. Joshua chapter 8. They're going back to fight the people that just beat them. Here's what Joshua 9 and verse 1 says. When all the kings west of the Jordan heard about these things, the kings in the hill country, in the western foothills, and along the entire coast of the Mediterranean Sea, as far as Lebanon, the kings of the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites, they came together to wage war against Joshua and Israel. God's giving them this land, apparently. God's giving them it. No one's going to be able to stand against them. Seems to be an awful lot of opposition. For such a beautiful promise. Joshua 10. They're in battle and Joshua has to pray to ask God for the sun to stand still. Verse 13, it says, the sun stopped in the middle of the sky and delayed going down about a full day. They were fighting for over 24 hours in battle. So Joshua 12:7 says this. Here's a list of the kings of the land that Joshua and the Israelites conquered on the west side of the Jordan, from Baal-Gad in the valley of Lebanon to Mount Halak, which rises towards Seir. Joshua gave the lands as inheritance to the tribes of Israel according to their tribal divisions. The lands included the hill country, the western foothills, the Arabah, the mountain slopes, the wilderness and the Negev. These were the lands of the Hittites, Amorites, Canaanites, Perizzites, Hivites, and Jebusites. These were the kings, the king of Jericho, the king of Ai, the king of Jerusalem, the king of Hebron, the king of Jarmuth, the king of Lachish, the king of Elgon, the king of Gezer, the king of Debir, the king of Gedder, the king of Homer, the king of Arad, the king of Libna, the king of Adullam, the king of Makeda, the king of Bethel, the king of Tapuna, the king of Hepher, the king of Aphek, the king of Lasharon, the king of Madon, the king of Hazor, the king of Shimron, Maron, the king of Akshaf, the king of Tanakh, the king of Megiddo, the king of Kadesh, the king of Janekim in Carmel, the king of Dor in Naphath Dor, the king of Goyim in Gilgal, the king of Tizah. 31 kings in all. 31 kings, battle after battle, challenge after challenge, disappointment, betrayal, uncertainty, have all been part of the journey to that point. And here's how Joshua 13:1 starts. When Joshua had grown old, the Lord said to him, "You're now very old, and there are still very large areas of the land to be taken over." There's an incredible promise. The assurance of victory. The promise of God's presence accompanying them. And the beauty of that promise almost seems contradicted by the journey they go on. And in seasons of transition, I wonder if the messiness of life has the capacity to undermine my confidence in the promise. Because the beauty of the promise almost contradicts the mess I find myself in. I will give you the land. Everywhere the sole of your foot will tread, I will give you. No one will be able to stand against you. As I was with Moses, so I will be with you. I will never leave you nor forsake you. And yet you read the book of Joshua and it's not really straightforward victories and loads of just, well, we put a foot here and now they've all dissolved. Lord, I've stood on the land and I've claimed it. My enemies have all disappeared. I mean, that's how I would interpret that promise in my life. Everywhere I put my foot, he's going to give it to me. If I just do a quick run round the land, they can chase me, but he's giving me it. So, you know, I'll just run round and that'll be it. And yet what actually happens is they have to fight. 31 kings are defeated in the process. Enemy after enemy comes up against them. Challenge after challenge confronts them. And I'm left staring at a beautiful promise. And thinking, this doesn't make sense in the mess of my life. Joshua doesn't do too well in Joshua 7. Joshua 7 and verse 6. It says, Joshua tore his clothes and fell face down to the ground before the ark of the Lord, remaining there till evening. The elders of Israel did the same and sprinkled dust on their heads. And Joshua said, "Alas, sovereign Lord, why did you ever bring this people across the Jordan to deliver us into the hands of the Amorites to destroy us? If only we'd be content to stay on the other side of the Jordan. Pardon your servant, Lord. What can I say? Now that Israel has been routed by its enemies, the Canaanites and the other people of the country will hear about this, and they will surround us and wipe out our name from the earth. What then will you do for your own great name?" I think I find myself there sometimes. I know what the promise is, but I'm persuaded it's not happening. See, I think as Christians we have this tendency to put things on mugs and t-shirts and bookmarks. If you're really fancy, you might get a sticker and stick it on your wall in the lovely wall art format. And then find them all a bit cliche when life's difficult and tough. Because the beauty of the promise contradicts the mess of my life. So I know he's going to make thing all things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to his purpose. But I know nothing can separate me from the love of God that's in Christ Jesus. But and suddenly I actually just want to be a bit dismissive of those things. I'm going to suggest to you that the purpose of the promise is for the seasons of messiness. Because I don't need to be assured God's good when life's good. I don't need to be assured that God's doing something good when I feel like he is. I don't need hope for tomorrow when today is just brilliant. But when I am facing the reality that I have been routed by a foreign army and I think everybody's now coming for me and I'm on my face asking God why on earth he's done this to me, I think I need to know then. That he's giving me everywhere that the soles of my feet tread. That no one will be able to stand against me. that he is with me and he will not leave me and forsake me? I think it's then that I need to know. And if I can urge you one thing, I understand you've learnt a whole pile of the promises of God and they seem a bit cliche, you know. And they're almost too basic. And I need to give some context to them because otherwise I'll want the, you know, think I'm living in Disneyland, like, you know, and everything's going to end happily ever after. Here's my conviction. It does. It all ends happily ever after. Disney stole the idea from him. And there's a beautiful promise made to the people of Israel. And they go on a really messy journey. It's easy to devalue the promise in that point, to be dismissive of it. I'm going to suggest to you its purpose is to hold you in those moments. I need to shut up because time's gone. Second Peter 1 and verse 4, I think it is. Talks about the great and precious promises we've been given. That through them, we might be partakers in the divine nature. That through them, we might be partakers in the divine nature. Can I urge you just think about that? Through the promises, the great and precious promises he's given us, we become partakers in the divine nature. I think that's staggering. We're going to break bread together. First Corinthians 11. Says, as often as you eat this bread and drink this cup, you proclaim the Lord's death till he comes. Part of breaking bread, sharing communion, I'm going to say is a reminder to myself that the promise is still to be fulfilled in my life. That my Savior is returning. I am proclaiming that the God who spoke in Genesis and said, I'm sending my seed, and thousands of years later sent Jesus, yeah, is committed to returning. Yeah. I am proclaiming the Lord's death till he comes. Yeah. I want you to think about that as we break bread together. That his promise is still to be fulfilled. He hasn't abandoned it in spite of the messiness of life. Let's break bread together.